Hello, hello. How are we doing today? You know who it is. It is Bruce Jordan, the Michael Jordan Hotels. We are live and ready to go. I'm over here with Bart. Bart Rookie, what's going on, buddy? How you
Hey,
doing?
yeah, I'm excellent. Can't wait to chat with you. And I was complimenting you before we went live on what a great service and idea that you are providing for people that want to learn more about hotels and what books and resources are out there. I just love it. And I know that's one little slice of your businesses, but I'm proud of you and thrilled to be able to chat.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. For those that you don't know, we have the author of Most People Don't in the house. What inspired you to write this book?
Wow. Okay. Years ago, when I was with Ritz-Carlton, Hotel Magazine approached one of my colleagues, one of our senior vice presidents, and said, "Hey, look, we would like to be able to get a member of your team to blog, right? To write a blog once a week." And Bruce, this was probably like 20 years ago. And so Bruce Himmelstein, a dear friend, now consulting, said, "You know what? Bart would be a great person to do this." So I started writing a blog for Hotels Magazine, and again, 20 years ago. And I remember this was really before most people were traveling around with their mobile phones and had cameras. And I'll never forget Jeff Weinstein, the editor-in-chief at the time, said, "You know what? Just take a camera wherever you go and observe things. And that's the most important thing, to be able to share ideas on what you observe." That's how it started. So I started blogging once or twice a week. And imagine after 15 or 16 years, Bruce, you have a lot of stories. And a person, a very dear friend, said, "You know what? I love reading your blog posts. They're getting more and more popular." In fact, I got a note from someone at one point in India that was reading the blog stories to his staff at a juice bar in India just to keep their motivation up. I was like, "Oh my, like I had no idea." So again, one person said, "Why don't you put your favorite stories into a book?" And that's really how it started. I took some of my favorite stories out of a selection of, what, 1,500 blog posts, put them into a book, and organically, it has just kind of grown and grown and grown. Fortunate to say, at one point, top 1%, still top 1% of sales on Amazon. So very, very fortunate.
Now I know you branched out into other things besides hotels because you can't keep all that knowledge and wisdom contained into one industry. But how did you get started in the hotel business?
Wow. So I graduated Penn State with a degree in hotel management. And from there, 10 years with Hyatt Hotels. Very rare that I know people pursue what they studied, but I did. Loved the industry, still love the industry. Did a couple of convention and visitor bureau things in between. And then 16 years with Ritz-Carlton, which then morphed into Marriott International Luxury Brands, leading part of a global sales team. The reason, Bruce, why I got into hospitality, I thought it was a nice mixture between business and people, right? I thought at one point that I would just be a writer or I would just be a creative artist. And people advised me, "You're probably not going to really make that much money for a living if you just do that." And I wasn't necessarily thrilled with just the business element. It was a little too, I don't want to say boring, but a little too cold for me. But when you look at hotel, and you know this more than anyone, Bruce, it's about the revenue aspect. And yes, it is serving customers, it's treating employees well. But it is a business. It's a profitable business, most likely, whether it's clubs, hotels, restaurants, residences, you name it. It was just a really nice combination for helping people and still being in the business world.
I know you weren't always in the public speaking space. What made you get started with public speaking? Were some of the challenges that you had when you first started?
Sure. And I probably didn't select the best time, let's put it this way. So Bruce, the book was published again about 11 or 12 years ago when the pandemic hit. Most of my team sadly was getting furloughed, losing their jobs, and I had to make a decision. What was going to happen during COVID to the world of luxury travel or the world of hospitality in general? We know it was taking a hit. Thankfully, I had something, I don't want to say to fall back on, but to fall into. When I was with Ritz-Carlton and had published the book, I had asked, right? I wanted to make sure that I could get permission from Ritz-Carlton. And they said, "Yeah, just don't let people know it's your ideas. And if you want to put a little bit about your background with Ritz-Carlton, fine. And I said, you know, I'd rather leave it very, very separate. Along those lines, people would find, right, find the book. I know it's with the green screen, find the book, and ask if I would speak to the topic. Could I share some ideas on I'm allergic to gorillas, or my dog's feet smell like Fritos, or risk, reward, and microwave popcorn, like the little chapter headings. And I would get approval from my employer to say, hey, can I do this? It's not competitive. It's right unrelated. May I do this? And I would be hired then day off to go and speak. And I knew I loved it. And I knew it was really making a difference for the people that were listening to the message. So fast forward, pandemic. I could wait to see what happened, or I could take responsibility. I could deliberate my intentions, and I could start full-time a business. It was a leap that was not necessarily easy, but it was the best and most fulfilling thing I've ever done from a professional lens in my entire career.
That is amazing. That is amazing. You have something that all managers and business owners sometimes struggle with, because it's not like they had a whole lot of practice. You have what we call natural charisma. How did that develop, and what are some of the key tools and principles that you use that someone else can use to develop that charisma that you have?
Yeah, wow, thank you. And that's a huge compliment. Thank you. I do regard myself as an introvert, but I become extroverted when I know I can help people. Mm-hmm. And I found myself all throughout my entire career, and even growing up, and Bruce, I shared this story, as a child, elementary school, I picked Betsy, and that could also be the new topic of a story, pick Betsy. Betsy was not the most athletic kid, and this was probably second grade or so. Mm-hmm. I was the captain of the kickball team for that day, and I picked Betsy. I didn't pick Matt and Roger and Bruce and Kenny that were much better kickball players. I felt bad that Betsy was never getting picked. Red cheeks, red hair, pigtails, not athletic, but I picked Betsy. I don't know what propelled me to pick Betsy, but that was just kind of an indication that I was thoughtful to see how other people needed things that I could help with. So very unique, even at a young age. And I don't know where it came from. My mother, very, very empathetic and very loving and caring and very observant to people. My father, an art teacher before he passed, more of an introvert. But I think the ability of opening up to watch people, to see people. I remember sitting through so many different meetings, corporate meetings. And yes, I'm trying to pay attention to the content. But more often than not, I was looking to see who was paying attention in the room, who perhaps needed something, who was sitting by themselves. And this is me as an audience member, who was connecting with who was allowing someone else to speak up. It's this observance of other people. And I think something that people can think about is two statements that I share. It's see something, do something. So not see something, say something, like after 9/11, signed all over New York City. If you see something, say something. My suggestion is if you see something, do something. If someone needs help, do it. Bruce, I'm so sorry that you're not feeling well. If there's anything you need, please don't hesitate to reach out. Let me know what I can do. Well, Bruce, I can get your home address and I can order some chicken noodle soup to be delivered tomorrow to you, right? Why do we need to offer help? Why don't we just do it? Nice. You see someone that is, I shared a story the other day. This was actually in Orlando, SeaWorld. There was a gentleman walking with his walker all through the parking lot heading to the Renaissance SeaWorld, beautiful hotel. And he was huffing and puffing and having a hard time. And I caught up to him and I just wanted to let him know that I could be there for company without saying I'm there for company. Hey, you know, you're doing well. You're doing great. I know it's a long walk, but you're doing well. How was your visit? It's just chit-chatting to know that I was fine. I had extra water if he needed it. And then finally his wife met us about halfway. But then he starts to cross the street. And I don't know in Orlando if the laws of Florida that people need to stop when someone's crossing, but people were not stopping. And he almost walked in front of a bus.
Oh, wow.
I was walking with him and I jumped ahead of him and I literally had to stop the bus from impacting the crossway. See something, do something, right? And it's not that difficult. So that's one suggestion. See something, do something. The other suggestion is another term that I use is observe, anticipate, and over-deliver. We need to watch people. We need to stop looking down and start looking up, observe, and then see who could use help. Who could I help? And what does that help look like? I'm getting ready, as I shared with you, Bruce, to head to the airport here momentarily. And I travel with gratitude stones in my pocket. And I've shared this before, but I have gratitude stones in my pocket. And I'm hoping today, when I see someone at the airport that needs a little boost of inspiration or that is doing what most people don't do, I'm going to give them a little gratitude stone and I'm just going to say thank you. I'm going to observe. I'm going to anticipate. And not that giving a gratitude stone is over-delivering, but maybe conversation is over-delivering. And it's not that difficult. We just need to start looking up and thinking about others. Bruce, I want to learn more about you. I want to learn more about your businesses. I want to come visit you in Orlando. I want to do all these things. It's not about me. I started off the conversation. Bruce, tell me more about you. Okay, this is an interview for me, but I want to learn more about Bruce Jordan. Long answer, but.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. That was amazing. That was amazing. When you were writing this book, what were some of the challenges that you was facing? Just putting everything together and trying to find and capture the correct audience that this book will really, really, really just expand on and they'll just love it.
Yeah, I think the challenges were I had so many stories to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make sure the ones that I selected weren't just hospitality related.
Mm-hmm.
They were kindness, gratitude, and taking action related. Right. So the appreciation advantage, say thank you as many times as it takes. So it's something, right, that I had observed, but I thought, you know what, that could be applicable for everybody. Crossing your I's and dotting your T's. Obviously, you don't cross your I's, you don't dot your T's, but it's about most people don't pay attention to the little details. Mm-hmm. Is that applicable for a high school student? It can be when they're applying for colleges. Is it applicable for professionals like you and I? Yeah, it really is. You know, what if I spelled my name wrong? Or Bruce, what if I called you Bryce? You know, those the details matter. What if a hotel friend gives an upgrade to a very important guest and gives them access to a cabana and they spell their name Bert Barkey? Welcome Bert Barkey to this $1,700 a day cabana. What happens to the experience? So it was, again, a selection of little stories that I think could apply for anyone. I'll share one more. My dry cleaner wears wrinkled shirts. Most people don't exude respectability inside and outside of the workplace. Because how would you feel if I didn't talk about hospitable things? Or what if I was very arrogant and not thoughtful in thinking of others? It would totally diminish my validity. Bruce, the same thing with you. What if you didn't ask any questions and you're the host and you just talked about yourself? Well, you're a dry cleaner that wears wrinkled shirts then. We need to be who we are. I talk often about taking the stairs versus the escalator.
Oh, yeah. I love that one.
Yeah. It's better for us. And I got to tell you, right, I'm heading to DCA soon. If you catch me, now I've had some neck problems, but if you catch me when I'm feeling good, not taking the stairs, I want you to hold me accountable, right? If I'm saying that I'm nice and kind to people and you catch me not being nice and kind to people, I'm a dry cleaner that wears wrinkled shirts. It's a reminder, again, for me to be good and do good because that's what I'm encouraging other people to do.
Yeah, I'm just going to make sure all the hotels you stay at don't have an elevator.
Thank you, Bruce Jordan. Appreciate that.
Now, what do you think, who helps this book the most? Is this book for everyone? Is this book for a certain set of people that they just resonate with it? Is it like, how do you feel like how this book helps people the most?
Okay. I think it can help everybody. I find individuals, I find business professionals in hospitality using it, buying it for their entire sales and service team. Management companies, hospitality management companies buying it for their entire teams. But then I also see community association managers buying it for themselves. I see them buying extra copies to give to their high school or college students. And then, Bruce, you had referenced before we hit live my TED Talk. I cannot tell you, and I received a letter just the other day that someone attended one of our conferences, went home after the conference, and made their children, their 16 and 17-year-old children, watch my TED Talk because they felt that there were so many valuable and invaluable takeaways, which, again, I'm thrilled. I'm able to help people. To answer your question, I think it is good for anybody and everybody that wants to get better. I'll share this quote. It's easy to be, but it's better to become. If people are comfortable in just being, if I'm unmotivated today, what do I need to do tomorrow to remain unmotivated? I don't need to do a darn thing. It is not for those people. I presented to a group just recently, and I do a survey typically to get to understand that the complexities of the people that I'm speaking with. This group, I asked the question, what percentage of your time are you focusing in on yourself? So out of 100% of your time, what percent are you spending focusing in on yourself? The majority of the people that I talk to are spending this much time focusing in on themselves, and they're focusing the majority of their time on everyone else. That's what we do in hospitality. We know that. Those are really the right type of people for the book. If people are self-centered, narcissistic, and don't care about getting better or doing good or helping, the book is not for them, and that's fine. Right? Read some other book about how to make millions by not being kind to people. I don't know. but it's for people that want to improve and get better and have that open-mindedness of wanting to get better.
What are some of the things, because I know you're speaking from personal experience, what are some of the things that you do on a daily basis, whether it be weekly, monthly, or yearly, to help focus on yourself to get better?
Yeah. Oh, love your question. Love your question. I share everyday W's, and there's four W's that this relates to. When you wake up, try to move. Try to get outside if you can for at least 5 minutes within the first hour of waking up, okay? So waking up and getting outside is step one. I try to do that. I have two dogs, so I always will do that within the first hour of waking up. So that's the first one, wake. Second one is walk, which is, again, walking the dogs. Third one is water. Drink water before coffee. You need to hydrate before you caffeinate. And it's not always easy. I love coffee. I've only been a coffee drinker for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. But again, water, I'm going to hydrate. I'm going to drink a full cup of water before I have my coffee. And then the last W is weight. And I think this is the really one of the most important ones. So we know we're walking, we're waking, we're drinking water. And then weight is this. 85% of people, Bruce, within the first 15 minutes of waking up, will look at their mobile phone. Okay.
Yes. Weight. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Wait to do that. Wait an hour. And guess what? If you can't wait an hour, wake up earlier so you still wait to look at your mobile phone, because this is going to be a distractor, and it's also going to be a detriment, and it's not going to allow you to deliberate your day. Imagine waking up and the first thing that you look at is, oh, Bruce Jordan told me next time he was in Washington, D.C., we're going to have lunch. And guess what? Bruce Jordan, I saw on Facebook, was in Washington, D.C., or well, I sent out a bid for this event and they told me that they were going to select me, but oh my gosh, they posted that they hired someone else on LinkedIn. It's going to put me down a path that I don't necessarily want to go on, right? I can find that information out later, but in the morning, what I want to do is I want to think good thoughts. Every person, every single day has an average of 60,000 thoughts. I want to think good thoughts. What am I happy for? What am I grateful for? Just begin to think good thoughts. And that will help you deliberate your day in a way that makes sense. That's what I've been doing. Again, the four W's, it's easy to remember: wake, walk, water, and wait.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. A lot of the ideas that I actually had It happened when I was working out, or when I, with the TV was off and my cell phone was away, and you know, things just pop into your mind when you let it rest.
Yes.
You know, if you're constantly thinking about everything all the time, you don't give your mind time to actually be creative. And right now we're living in a very creative world. So if you don't give your mind time to be creative, you're just going to pretty much go with the flow of anything that you see was going on.
Yeah. So I love that you shared that, Bruce. Think about it. In a few hours, I will be at the airport. Mm-hmm. I have a choice. I can put my AirPods in. I could put my headset on and I could watch something, or I could not have anything in my ears and I could sit and I could observe and I could anticipate and I can over deliver. I could help people. I can hear conversations. I can get stories as a result. I can watch great service happening, or I could watch service that perhaps could be improved upon. Anytime I step into an airport or an airplane, I'm going to have a new story to share. And it's a lesson that I can learn from me to help me. But then I want to share that with everyone, whether it's in the next book or a LinkedIn post or on my newsletter. That's really, really key. What are we taking the time to stop, pause, and observe what we can learn from others and how we can help others? In fact, I think this is kind of a cool challenge, Bruce. Tell me if you like this or not. I was with a very good friend of mine, one of the vice presidents of Conference Strike, Doug Barman, recently. And we were at a coffee shop, his wife and my wife. And I said, okay, Doug, just stop for a second. There was a long line to get coffee and pastries. I said, Doug, just stop for a second and look around. Who could you help right now? And because he comes from the world of hospitality, he's like, There's someone with a baby stroller that's coming out of the coffee shop. I could hold the door open for them. There's a baby behind me and they just dropped their blanket on the ground. I could go and pick that up. You know, there was like three or four things that he could envision already to be able to help people. My suggestion is, let's just help people. Let's look for that door to open, to be opened. Let's look for people to recognize and say hello. I shared this other story just recently, Bruce. There was a homeless gentleman in New York, and I was getting out of a cab, walking down the stairs to get into the subway to get to the train station. He held up a sign that said, I might as well be invisible.
Wow.
And I saw that because I'm trying to be observant. And I went up to him. I happened to have a dollar in my pocket. I gave him a dollar. But probably most importantly, I looked at him. And I gave him a gratitude stone. And I told him what the gratitude stone meant. It's for power and protection. And to remind you that there are good things in this earth, in this universe. And he introduced himself. He's like, my name is Fu. What's your name? My name is Bart. Nice to meet you, Bart. Thank you. Thank you for the gratitude stone. Conversation like you and I are having. But that wouldn't happen if we are so looking down. Easy reminders that you can do every single day.
Yeah, I think I need some more gratitude stones, because every time I give a dollar to a homeless person, they say, all you giving me is a dollar.
But you know what? And another friend of mine said, when he gave a gratitude stone, he said, I know they wanted a dollar, but they needed a gratitude stone. Wow, right? They wanted a dollar, but they needed a gratitude stone. That's powerful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, I'll tell everybody how they can get in touch with you, of course, and how they can get a book.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I know we didn't 100% talk about book, but this was a chance for us to get to know me, me to get to know you, your listeners to get to know me. So, right, the book, it's easy. It's Most People Don't Know Why You Should. There you kind of have it. It's on Amazon, but then if you go to my website, which is very easy to remember, mostpeopledon't.com, you can click on a couple of links there. I did make it available, the Kindle version, for 99 cents.
Nice.
And very, very easy. So there should be no obstacle for people to get it. I didn't write the book to make $1 million. I wrote the book to be able to help people. And then that's what I continue to do with keynote messages, sales and service training. All of my contact information, thank you for reminding us, Bruce, is mostpeopledon't.com, and happy to connect. I speak to profitable companies, non-profitable companies, nonprofit companies, it doesn't matter, right? I'm flexible to meet people's budgetary needs. I just think that the message is really, really important. And when people can walk away with one new idea, how it's going to improve their life, that's what it's all about. And it's very, very well worth it and very fulfilling.
Well, the book is definitely like chicken soup for the soul on steroids, that's for sure. But like I hear, like when you do the keynote speaking, that the morale in that organization just goes through the roof. Before you go, if you could just tell us a little bit about that, that'd be great.
Yeah. There's one exercise that we do that I have been doing, and it is taking time to just stop, look to the person to your right, to your left, and tell them that you're doing great. Just a simple statement. And it started because I was listening at one point, we're driving the car, my whole family, and I was listening to the comedian Tom Papa. And one of his spiels, one of his shticks is, you know, you're doing your best and you're doing great. And just as he said it through the radio, it kind of touched me. And I didn't think I needed someone to tell me that I was doing great. I feel like I'm doing good, right? I'm doing great. But it made me feel a certain way. Through this exercise, when you turn to somebody in person and you look them in the eye and you say, Bruce Jordan, I'm proud of you. You are doing great. You're helping to educate people. You're trying to help let people know where hospitality-related books are found, in addition to having several other businesses, including podcasts, in which you are helping others learn and get better and to deliver better service in our world of hospitality. You are doing great. And I mean that. But the power of when I say that to people, the power of when they say it to each other, it is unbelievable the number of tears that come as a result. And then I'll go around the room and I'll say, well, how did it make you feel? And they'll say, it's exactly what I needed to hear. And even though it came from a stranger, to hear that I'm doing great, that you're doing great, made a difference. I shared this with a group of FBLA high school students in Colorado recently. And I also shared my contact information, bart@mostpeopledon't.com. And I'm driving to the airport and I get this message from this one gentleman, one kid, and he says, Bart, will you do me a favor? Will you just tell me one more time that I'm doing great? I pulled off the side of the road on the way to the airport and I texted him or I emailed him back. Hey, XYZ, you're doing great. It was so nice to meet you. Most people don't follow up by sending the email. Most people aren't letting people know what they need. I'm so proud of you to be part of this organization and to reach out to people like me. You are doing great. And he responded after I sent that, thank you, Mr. Berkey. Thank you, Bart. I don't get to hear that enough at home. I don't get to hear that enough in school. I don't get to hear it from my classmates. Sometimes I'm bullied. So I just really wanted to hear that one more time. And guess what, Bruce? I'm still sending notes about once every 2 weeks to this guy, to this kid, young gentleman, saying, hello, by the way, how you doing? I think you're doing great. That's the power of just being kind to people. And that's the engagement that we get when I'm presenting, whether it's, you know, 100 people or 4,000 people. That's the engagement that we're able to get from stage. And it's life-changing. Easy to remember and life-changing.
Absolutely. That was incredible. Well, listen, that is our time. I am so grateful and thankful for you to be on the show. Of course. And we definitely got to catch up soon.
Yes. And I want to make sure that you are on my podcast as well. So thank you again, Bruce, for what you're doing. Thank you to the listeners that are trying to learn how to become better. What a great environment you have created and so proud to know you. Thank you.
Thank you. That's our time for the day. He has a fight to catch. So we're going to let him go and we'll probably have him back on the show again soon. All right. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Bruce. Thanks, everyone.
Anytime.